Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It is proving to be a long, slow journey for John Bolton as he tries to make his way from his current job as Undersecretary of State for Arms Control to the office of U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee has agreed to send Bolton's nomination along to the full Senate, but it was a distinctly unenthusiastic recommendation.
Mr. Hagel?
Aye.
Mr. Chafee?
Aye.
Mr. Allen?
Aye.
Mr. Voinovich?
Aye.
Mr. Biden?
No.
Mr. Sarbanes?
No.
Mr. Dodd?
No.
Mr. Kerry?
The senators voted along strict party lines, Republicans saying aye, Democrats saying nay, and at the end of it all, the entire committee said it was not a vote of endorsement for John Bolton. So what does that mean? What's the ongoing debate over Bolton's nomination really tell us about politics in Washington today? President Bush says Bolton is blunt, and that's good. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says he's a tough-minded diplomat. But the Ohio Republican Senator George Voinovich says Bolton is the poster boy for what a diplomat is not supposed to be. So what's your vote? Up or down? And looking ahead, would John Bolton help shake up or bring down the UN? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're starting today with Elaine Shannon. Elaine is Time Magazine State Department correspondent joining us from a studio in Washington, D.C. Hi, Elaine.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. Can you just help me understand what it means when a committee recommends someone or passes someone along to the Senate without recommendation or without endorsement?
Well, this has happened a few times in recent history, according to the New York Times this morning, and I have no reason to think they're wrong. This is the third time in about 20 years the Foreign Relations Committee has done this, and then there have been four or five, if you include nominations that came out of judiciary, among them people who ended up taking office, like Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court Justice.
And so do we look at this as a deal that was cut ahead of time with Voinovich and Murkowski and others who weren't too happy about Bolton saying, yes, we'll vote for him, but only under these circumstances?
Absolutely. According to the reports we're reading today, Senator Voinovich, who had earlier expressed grave reservations about Bolton and said yesterday he would not vote for him on the floor, he had told Chairman Lugar that he was going to vote against him in committee, and Lugar persuaded him to let it go forward and say his piece, but let it go to the floor and let the floor decide. This is a way out for a lot of these Republicans, but now they're going to have to say whatever they want to say on the floor.
And is it a given what's going to happen when this goes to the Senate?
I don't think it's a given, but there is a comfortable margin on the floor of the Senate, and what Bolton could bring in a couple of Democratic votes of some moderate Democrats. So I do not at this point assume that he is going to lose on the floor.
Elaine, I know you follow this, and I wonder if you can help me with one other aspect of trying to keep track of this. It was 3 weeks or perhaps longer when we last talked about John Bolton on this program. At the time, we talked about his now often repeated comments about that were critical of the UN, saying that the U.S. should be the only vote in the Security Council or the top 10 floors are superfluous. We heard about people saying that he was turning intelligence to suit his ideology, and also about his rough interpersonal skills. In that period of time, though, the committee gathered up hundreds of pages of information and did a whole bunch more interviews. Did we really learn anything new about John Bolton?
Well, there were some details, some filigree, as we sometimes say, but I think the outlines were there. The Democrats tried and tried and tried and failed to come up with another absolutely appalling example of where not only he was unpleasant with people, but where this affected the intelligence product. This is what they were aiming for, to show that he was twisting intelligence. That's the term they've been using, and they couldn't come up with enough to persuade the Republicans, who are the majority on the committee, to stop this nomination cold.
And in that same three-week period, we have heard principals speaking out. We certainly heard the president speaking in favor of Bolton on a couple of occasions, Secretary of State Rice as well, and reports of more critical views from former Secretary of State Colin Powell. When you add all that up, again, did it really not change that much?
That's right. In the cold light of day, it didn't. And at the meeting yesterday, Senator Lugar, the chairman, repeated something that he had pretty much said when he introduced John Bolton at his hearing. He talked about his behavior. He used the words, his actions were not always exemplary. On several occasions, he made incorrect assumptions about the behavior and motivations of subordinates. At other times, he failed to use proper managerial channels, unnecessarily personalized internal disputes. Pictures one of an aggressive policymaker who pressed his missions at every opportunity and argued vociferously for his point of view, and the process his blunt style alienated some colleagues. But then Lugar wound up by saying, but there's no evidence that he broke laws or engaged in serious ethical violations, which is a pretty low bar, and that will haunt Bolton as he goes to this new post.
Elaine, you know this man. You've met him. You've seen him in action. Are these assessments of his character reasonable? Are they fair?
Well, he's in the times I've met him, he's been polite to me. I have no complaints on that score. There are also many credible people in government who say that he was not well-behaved when dealing with them. And of course, the most serious charges are that he tried to have removed. He said he didn't try to get them fired, but he did try to have them removed from their portfolio. Some intelligence analysts whose analysis did not agree with what he wanted to say.
Let me introduce another guest who will be with us for the hour. Catherine Bertini is a former UN Undersecretary General for Management, served as Executive Director for the UN World Food Program. She's joining us on the line from Cortland, New York. Catherine, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
You are a friend and a supporter of John Bolton, right?
That's right.
And just so we're straight up about this, I think you wrote in the Wall Street Journal that he, in fact, helped you get one of those jobs at the UN, right?
That's correct.
So do you go back a long time with him?
Yes, I first met him probably 30 years ago when we were both active in Republican politics, and since then worked with him when he was Assistant Secretary of State and I was Assistant Secretary of Agriculture.
You listen to all this. Are you ready to pull the plug on your radio? Do you think your friend is getting a bad rap?
Yes, he's getting a bad rap. I mean, John is tough. He's very tough. He speaks with a lot of clarity, and he's very forceful. And that means he is also controversial. There's no question about that. But he, as one thing I said in that journal piece, is that he listens as intently as he speaks. And there have been numerous times in my relationship with John where we've been working on issues, and he has listened to other points of view and changed his own direction if he felt the other points of view were valid. And so I think that these are attributes that will serve him well in the United Nations role.
And because you know the UN so well from your time there, help me with one of the criticisms that is often repeated. That is that he doesn't have a lot of time for the UN, that he doesn't have a lot of time for that kind of multilateral international cooperation. What would you say to that?
Well, I have no doubt, again, from the time of our working together in the first Bush administration, that John is what I would call a multilateralist. He, although he believes very strongly in the role and the strength and the role of leadership role of the United States, he also believes that organizations like the United Nations are critical for the for American foreign policy, but second for overall peace in the world. And so he has, even when he has argued critically against the United Nations, he's also argued in support of reforming the United Nations. So he's never said the United Nations is bad, we should do away with it. He said it's worthwhile to fix it because it can do better.
You think these comments that are dragged out of earlier conferences and appearances are being used unfairly?
Well, I mean, they're fair game in that these are things that he doesn't deny having said or
right.
written. And when one has a body of work over a lifetime of experience working on international organizations, it would be, I think, more fair if one looked at the entire body of work as opposed to some of the more perhaps outrageous statements.
Let me go back to Elaine Shannon, Time Magazine State Department correspondent. Elaine, there was a comment made yesterday, and I think repeated by both Senator Voinovich and Senator Biden, that Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice had said, hey, don't worry about him. He's going to be closely supervised when he's at the UN. Have I got that quote right?
Well, the quote's right. I don't know whether what, in fact, she said.
It was Voinovich who said that was her remark to him. Is that right?
Yes, well, the line from the State Department has been that all American ambassadors are closely supervised, and they all clear things with the State Department, and they don't go out and say whatever it is that they feel in their hearts at that moment. That impulsiveness is not rewarded. And I think he is often quite careful about what he says, in my observation, sometimes not, according to some very credible witnesses. To his credit, his supporters have argued that he did, in fact, alter the speeches he wanted to make to suit the insistence of the intelligence community, and they also argue that, you know, our intelligence hasn't been great in many instances, and so you shouldn't have to only say what the intelligence community said. The intelligence community and the people who take that the other side, though, say, well, he can say what he feels, but he shouldn't say that the intelligence community has evidenced that, whatever it is.
All right, Connection listeners, we have heard and we have read about the sharp elbows of John Bolton, the controversy that continues to dog him as he makes his way through the approval process. We're interested in knowing, as you gather in the same amount of information that we are, what your thoughts are. Is it smart to have someone at the UN who carries with him that kind of direct endorsement of the president, or is it perhaps troublesome to have someone there with a record so that is critical of the United Nations? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour, a conversation about John Bolton as he makes his way from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to the floor of the Senate, where there will at some point in the future be a vote on his candidacy as U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. The controversy continues. Some senators, even on the Republican side, saying that they're not happy with him. But it looks like he'll probably have the numbers in the Senate. Before it goes to that, we'd like to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Catherine Bertini is with us. She is a colleague of John Bolton's, former UN Undersecretary General for Management. And Elaine Shannon is Time Magazine State Department correspondent. She's also with us on the program. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. Linda's on the line. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Tell me what you think.
I think it would be a disaster to send Bolton to the United Nations. Surely, as a country, we can do better than that. I think it would be a disaster. I have worked in both federal and state government, and I have done a lot of international travel. We do not need yet another person with this kind of reputation representing us and interacting with our counterparts in other parts of the world.
What is it about John Bolton that you think disqualifies him for this position?
Well, unlike one of your former callers, I think his past history amply illustrates that he is not going to be the right person for the job. I think Voinovich's comment is right on point. I think some of the comments that were just up that Secretary Rice had to say are sending a warning signal that they think he may be a loose cannon.
And so when you look at what people are saying about him, it's a mix in your mind of his interpersonal skills, his notions about the UN and intelligence, all put together then, Linda?
All put together. I don't see anything in his interactions with other people within his workplace or with his comments on the United Nations historically that are going to give us any feeling that he is going to represent the United States well in the United Nations.
Linda, I'm going to bring in one more guest here. Constance Stelzenmüller has been listening along. She's political editor of the German weekly Die Zeit, joining us on the line from Hamburg. And Constance, maybe you can help us with a perspective from outside this country. How carefully is this whole process and this particular man being watched?
Well, good morning, Dick Gordon, and thank you for having me yet again. I've met Bolton a couple of times, and it's certainly right to say that he's a blunt and forceful man, and tough is probably also true. And yes, I think the process is being watched very carefully. There are two reasons, one general, one specific, why the Europeans are interested in. The general is that we are, I think, culturally UN-friendly, not because we're sort of always in favor of multilateralism, but because we've been working with the UN in crisis, post-war nation-building operations in the Balkans and in Afghanistan for over a decade now. And it's NATO, the EU, and the UN together. So we have practical experience with that. The specific reason is that there is a window of opportunity this year, probably the first since the signing of the UN Charter in 1945, for real UN reform, and it is therefore very, very important who is handling the negotiations on the American side.
And where does Bolton fit into European thoughts on reform? If, as his friends say, this is someone who gets stuff done, is there anybody in Europe who's looking at that and saying, well, maybe he'll be helpful?
That would be all to the good. Here's the situation. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan has made an extensive reform proposal after having received some suggestions from a high-level panel of experts, and pretty much everybody around the world agrees that the UN is now a dysfunctional organization, as much useful work as it is doing, and needs to be reformed. And certainly the United States, and probably also Mr. Bolton and the Europeans, would agree, for example, that the UN Human Rights Commission needs to be reformed. In other words, that we can't have dictators adjudicating on human rights issues. Mm-hmm. The really controversial issue, and we're talking here about somebody that's already being negotiated right now because the reform package is being dealt with by diplomats, and those who are advocating reform would like to have it tabled at the United Nations General Assembly this fall. So this is already an ongoing process. And the controversial element, of course, is Security Council reform. There is an ongoing movement to expand the membership of the UN Security Council, which is, of course, the executive organ of the United Nations. And there is a four-country campaign, of which my country is one. It's Germany, India, Japan, and Brazil, who want to become members, in fact, permanent members, if possible, of the Security Council. I don't know whether Mr. Bolton is very keen on that. He hasn't said so yet, but I would say it's open to question.
What do you think, Catherine Bertini?
Well, I don't know John's position, but his position is whatever the president's position is. But our German colleague just described very well what's going on in New York. And frankly, this is one of the reasons why I think somebody like John would be terrific in the job, because he would not need any on-the-job experience. He knows the inside and outside of the UN bureaucracy, of the UN committee structure, of how the different governments work in terms of their decision-making process, both in capitals and in their missions in New York. And so all of those kind of things would mean that John could hit the ground running with the U.S. positions in mind in order to negotiate at very senior levels, very substantively, right away. And it is correct that all of those discussions are going on now in New York and in capitals, and the U.S. needs to have a strong voice within those discussions.
But here's where I see actually more logic in the European reservations, Catherine, because if John Bolton has in the past said that the U.S. needs to, you know, be that strong voice at the U.N., in fact, I think he said, you know, the one permanent member of the Security Council, I can't imagine him being anything but opposed to widening the membership to include Germany and India and Japan and Brazil.
Well, first of all, I don't believe the U.S. has made a formal statement about its position, but it goes far beyond what John's position is or view is. But second of all, there's a lot of people opposed to expanding the Security Council. Pakistan doesn't want India on it. Italy wants to be on it and doesn't want Germany on it unless it's on it. There's a lot of discussion in South America. There are those four countries who are anxious to be members, but this is not anywhere near a done deal. And what the U.S. position has is in this discussion, only one of many pieces. I mean, Europe is not even in sync in terms of what it wants. And there are a lot of different views from developing countries. So.
But how do you make the case to Constance's point, though, that John Bolton is going to wade into all that and actually be effective?
I think he would be very effective, and she didn't say he wouldn't be.
No, I understand that. I'm just wondering how you make the case that when every country has its own interest and its own ideas about whatever the Security Council is going to be, why it is you think John Bolton's representing the United States there would be a good thing for this country and for the UN?
First and foremost, because he understands it extremely well, and he's been very successful in the past. In the first Gulf War resolutions, for instance, he was instrumental in working through the UN to ultimately for the decision by the UN that would authorize force, which for the first Gulf War, which was the first time that happened since the Korean War. He was successful in that regard. He was successful in the resolution in 1991 about Zionism versus racism, which was the first time the UN actually went back on a resolution that it had made before. So he has a track record of having actually succeeded in convincing on very important issues the rest of the Security Council and other member states to support the position that the U.S. at the time took.
Constance, what do you think?
Well, I'm sort of several minds about expansion of the UN Security Council, including one country's candidacy. And I also think that Catherine Bertini is quite right when she says that there all these four candidates have allies and enemies. And I think what people at the UN and in the UN missions are most terrified of, and I don't think that word is exaggerating it, that a showdown over the expansion of the UN Security Council would lead to a procedural gridlock, which would prevent possible reforms on which many countries actually see eye to eye. And what that means is that in the coming months, all sides are going to have to be very careful, very diplomatic. And the question in many people's minds, I think including in some people's minds at the State Department, is whether John Bolton will be the right man to do that on the American side, which of course is a crucial position.
Elaine, is that a fair assessment?
Yes. Now, I accompanied Secretary Rice when she went to India, Japan, and Brazil. And at every stop, she was asked to endorse that country's candidacy for the Security Council. She spoke more warmly of a position for Japan on an expanded Security Council, but in the other cases and generally, she said, well, yes, we support changing the Security Council because the world is different than it was after World War II and the Cold War, but we support this in the context of overall reform of the UN. So there's a bit of quite a lot of wiggle room there before you get to the Security Council. I think her interest is that the whole thing needs to be set up in such a way that you don't get this gridlock.
1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, we'd like to hear from you. Next to Acton, Massachusetts, Paul's with us. Hello, Paul.
Hi. I've got a couple of points. One, all I've heard so far is Bolton and his subordinates and some other people in the government where he's dealt with them in the background. And I haven't heard a lot of criticism of him dealing with his peers. And in the UN, he's going to be dealing peer-to-peer, and he's going to be executing the policy of the government. And the question that it all boils down to is, what's his methods going to be? And how he deals with his subordinates and how he deals in the background is irrelevant. What's really relevant is, you know, the methods and the way he's going to deal with his peers. And one can't imagine that he's going to be antagonistic and aggressive and obnoxious when it comes to dealing with people in the UN. On top of that, talking about him and his personal opinions and how that is going to be expressed by him, well, I just don't see that happening because he's going to be executing policy, and he's not going to be going against President Bush or against the general policy of the country.
I think, Catherine Bertini, this is the point that you were making earlier, that John Bolton has a fair amount of experience within these kinds of international walls, working peer-to-peer with people from other countries?
Yes, he does, and he knows how they operate. And but the caller is correct too that these policies come from the president and secretary of state. And yes, there certainly is some latitude on the part of any ambassador, but within a framework that's established by the president and secretary of state.
And Constance, if I can just come back to you on one point that people who are backing Bolton use, they say this. This is a man who was chosen by the re-elected president of the United States. If anybody is going to be representing the interests of the U.S. at the U.N., you might not like what he has to say. You might not even like the president that he represents. But at least you have to acknowledge that he does speak with the backing of the administration.
Well, I would hope that would be true for all U.N. ambassadors. I mean, that's the kind of argument that's being made as to why it is better to have Condoleezza Rice in the State Department than Colin Powell, who in the end was a bit isolated. Let me point you to one historical example, though, where this might go wrong. I covered the International Criminal Court negotiations in 1998 in Rome, and few people know this is something that the present U.S. administration is opposed to, and it was voted at the time the treaty into power with, a vote of 124 and 7 against and 7 abstentions, and the U.S. was one of the 7 against votes. And few people know that the State Department worked for years and years to this, this treaty, and very successfully included a lot of its viewpoints. And at the end, a negotiating group from the Pentagon and Jesse Helms' Committee on Foreign Relations in the Senate came in, and I think by general assessment overplayed its hand, and that was what turned around the situation, made many developing countries, many new democracies take sides against the Americans who otherwise would not have done so. And so I think my point is it is very crucial for whoever negotiates on the American side here to use a light hand and a tactful hand so that this works. And it doesn't fail, and the UN does not slide further into dysfunctionalism and perhaps oblivion.
Catherine, you wanted to jump in here.
Yeah, well, I agree with that, and nothing I know about John suggests that he wouldn't be sensitive to other national concerns. So, but I agree that that's the way to do it.
1-800-423-TALKS, the number to join us as we talk about John Bolton's progress through the approval process in Washington. To Boston next, and Ari is on the line. Hi, Ari.
Hi, Dick. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask your guest, what do they think regarding what type of message are we sending to the international community at this time when there is a division along the party line? That is, you know, North Korea is going to be doing a nuclear test soon, as they say in the media, and Iran is going to be brought to the Security Council. And wouldn't that show some sort of a weakness within the administration, or not the administration, but the American political structure?
Now, Ari, just so I'm clear on your question, you're saying what's the message when the U.S. sends someone who is controversial or who has already expressed opinions? What specifically are you looking for here?
Well, when Democrats choose a side to decide to go against every appointee of President Bush and the administration, what type of message are we sending to the rest of the world?
Well, Constance, that's probably a useful one for your reflection here. Are there people in Europe who are looking at this approval process? It's really just a political fur flying in the U.S., Democrats and Republicans still fighting the results of the last election, that maybe it's not really about John Bolton after all.
It doesn't look like that to me from here. I don't think. I think I'm pretty confident that these senators involved in this vote are all very experienced and all have a deep concern that this reform process at the United Nations work in some way so that we end up with a more effective, more legitimate, more relevant United Nations rather than one that's falling apart. I think we probably do have to believe that some of these people have worked with Bolton before the scenes and behind the scenes.
Yeah.
and can justify their reservations.
And Elaine, just to pick one other part of Ari's question, I'm wondering, for what period of time, assuming John Bolton is confirmed, he will continue to live with the history of his past comments. I mean, he's been very critical of the North Koreans. Does that handcuff him a little bit when he goes to the UN to deal with this at the Security Council level?
I think that's a fascinating question. Of course, the administration, the government at the professional level, everybody's pretty critical of the North Koreans. He's been more up front than some. The North Koreans aren't joining these talks. There's a lot of threatening behavior coming out of there. So ultimately, the U.S., Condi Rice, everybody you talk to, thinks it's going to end up in the Security Council, at which point the U.S. will need allies to get some kind of resolution through, and the same with Iran.
Connection listeners, as we track the progress of John Bolton through his approval process in Washington, we're hearing some very different perspectives on exactly what he would bring to the United Nations as U.S. ambassador. Senator Voinovich saying that he is the poster boy for what a diplomat is not supposed to be. Supporters of John Bolton saying his kind of tough-minded attitude and his sharp mind, exactly what the U.S. needs to represent the administration at the U.N. in the very year when reform is on the table. What do you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection. So just how close is John Bolton to becoming the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations through the committee, still coming to the Senate? Questions still from both sides, though it appears increasingly likely that the Senate will approve him for the position. So a chance for us to talk about what the process tells us about Washington politics and also what the appointment of John Bolton will tell us about the U.S. presence at the U.N. in this coming year. We're at 1-800-423-8255 to Charlottesville, Virginia. Mickey's on the line. Hi, Mickey.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have some questions about John Bolton, and my questions have to do with the manipulation of intelligence for political purposes. I mean, for me, this isn't simply about how he deals with subordinates, but in this case, the subordinates just happen to be intelligence officers whose input is really vital for the security of our country. And given our entry into the Iraq War based on faulty intelligence and or with questions about how that intelligence was used, I'd just like to hear your comments on
Mickey, let me go to Elaine Shannon on this one.
This is a particular concern to people. This is whether this is of particular concern.
Mickey, let me just stop you here. I want to go to Elaine Shannon on here because it's, I mean, there's been so much now, Elaine, that's said and written about this. What can we shove away from the table and what can we focus on here? Is it reasonable to look at John Bolton and say that the man is guilty of bringing political ideology to intelligence?
Well, he certainly had strong views on Cuba and on the state, whether their weapons of mass destruction program, I believe biological, was active or not. The CIA and the State Department's intelligence shop said that there wasn't enough evidence to say some things that he wanted to say about it being currently active. And ultimately, he didn't say those things, but in the course of this, he got in a big dispute with the two intelligence analysts and pressed the CIA to remove from dealing with him one of them, and pressed the State Department intelligence shop to move another one. So the point was his persistence dealing with these two guys, not that he actually came out with the intelligence. And then, of course, the famous speech about Korea, in which he made a lot of very strong remarks about North Korea. The ambassador who was out there at the time in South Korea and the U.S. ambassador who was the point man on trying to get North Korea to the bargaining table to try to persuade them to back off the nuclear program were both very upset that he made these remarks just at a very pivotal time in trying to get North Korea to the table. They ultimately did come to the table.
Catherine Bertini, I'm wondering, in your view, if this the questions raised about his use of intelligence are reasonable in a year when, you know, people from both sides of the aisle in Washington are saying intelligence has been a mess recently.
Yes, well, yes, I don't think that anybody is very proud of the way our intelligence operation has worked. It's not an area where I worked with John, so I really only know what all of us know from reading the papers or can guess about, so I really can't. I really don't have much of an opinion, except, of course, to share the view that it's very important that we have intelligence and that we use it properly.
Yeah, fair enough. And Constanze, I'm wondering if this is part of the calculation of other countries trying to take the measure of John Bolton.
Well, it's going to play a very important role, as an earlier caller had said, in debates at the United Nations, not just about UN reform, but about how to deal with the Iranian nuclear program, North Korea, and I would also add Darfur. All of those involve highly sensitive intelligence assessment on one level or another, and it matters very much where that comes from, of what quality it is. And I think after the mutual distrust bred out of the Iraqi experience, there's going to be a lot of ground to be bridged for there to be, you know, reasonable and fruitful debates on either of these three issues at the UN between the Americans and other Western countries.
So, Constant, how, in your view, how deep are the reservations among European nations over John Bolton? Are people looking at the likelihood of his appointment and saying, well, that's it? Reform's not going to happen if the man is put in that job?
No, I don't think so. Look, a lot of the people who serve in the missions of the United Nations are very seasoned diplomats, and they know that you can only achieve institutional change at such old organizations if you have people who are not just experienced, but also forceful. And so I think forcefulness in itself is not bad. The question is, will John Bolton be willing to compromise on some issue, or will he be willing to represent issues that might be a compromise in the direction of some other Western allies of the U.S.? Or will he adopt a tone that would make it very difficult for other countries to compromise?
Constance, I want to thank you for being with us, and I think congratulations are in order. You've got a new job as head of the Berlin office for the German Marshall Fund.
That's correct, as of July 1st. Thank you very much.
Do I do we still get to talk to you when you're there?
I'd be delighted. Always
in PR. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye, Dick.
Bye-bye. Constanze Stossenmüller is currently defense and security editor of the German weekly Die Zeit. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going next to Durham, North Carolina. Bob's with us. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Dick. How are you doing this morning?
Fine, thanks.
I wanted to introduce another idea into this discussion. I have a bit of a legal background, and in some of the situations I've been in the negotiations, I've been aware of a position in negotiations that's been occupied by what I like to think of as a professional whiner, somebody who introduces stress into the situation to make the other party capitulate faster. And if you think that Bolton could serve that purpose in negotiations with the UN and getting a preferred position.
Did you say whiner, Bob?
A professional whiner. Somebody introduces stress into the situation to make the parties want to get away from it faster.
Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, you're using that term in a slightly complimentary way. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. As a negotiating tool, somebody who introduces stress into a situation to make the parties want to get away from the situation faster.
Catherine Bertini, you've known this man for years. Is this a reasonable assessment of the way he operates?
Well, I think he's a very adept negotiator, but he decides, though, I mean, what way he wants to start. Does he just want to be a tough guy and just, you know, take his position, and the position is so important that we're never going to have even in a compromise? Or is it going to be, here's our position, but we're willing to change it in any appropriate manner? And then there's a lot of different ways in between. So the proposal that the caller makes, I think, is a potentially useful one of many different negotiating ploys to undertake. But John's very, very skillful at these things. And my view is that he can choose the proper means of operation depending on what his ultimate objectives are on behalf of the U.S.
Let me, if I can, go to Elaine Shannon, Time Magazine's State Department correspondent here, for a perspective we've not yet covered, Elaine, and that is the State Department perspective. I've read kind of backstories from people saying that there are a good number of people within State Department who'd like to see him get this job, not so much to reward him, but to move him out of State Department. Is that reasonable?
That's true. And I've had people say to me, you know, the interesting thing is he's sometimes not very pleasant to people who absolutely share his ideological point of view or his policy point of view. It just is a personality thing. I've also heard people say that, you know, he's fair, he's forceful, and he will be valuable up there. You know, there's a strong difference. Whatever people's view is, the fact is he is going to be up there. He is going to be, I think, coordinating closely with Maine State, and he's absolutely going to have this huge spotlight on him. So every deviation, every private conversation, it's going to be hard for him to operate quietly or in secret because there's so many people interested if they are with him in getting that story out.
I mean, it's a good point that you raise, Elaine. I'm wondering if that hampers his effectiveness, all the attention that's been lavished on him up to this point.
Well, as a journalist, I believe in getting the information out and finding out what government officials are doing, what our government is doing, and I think this will help.
Catherine Bertini, I'm wondering if in just thinking this through with John Bolton in mind. He's rolling his eyes at the amount of attention that he's gathering. Is it going to make him a less effective diplomat because so many people will be listening and watching?
I don't think it'll make him less effective, but I think it'll be he'll be watching every phrase he uses. He'll have to, because he knows that he's under a microscope. But that, I don't think, means that, therefore, he would be less effective.
Elaine, can you help me also with a little bit of the backstory on support? If you look at the administration, do you mark the Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, as the person who is backing Bolton most for this job? Is it the president? Is it the vice president? Who's his real champion there?
Well, we believe that his real champion is Dick Cheney, and he's a very, very powerful voice in this administration. I believe Secretary Rice is also backing him, and that's been interesting. You hear reports that she's assured people, well, we'll get him out of this town and put him in that town. But you also hear her saying very strongly, I think this is a good man to be at the UN, and I fully support him. She is a very, very loyal follower of President Bush, and her effectiveness is tied to the fact that there's no daylight between her and President Bush, and I don't think she's going to put any daylight between herself and the White House over this nomination.
But are we starting to see a little bit of daylight between the White House and Republican senators, maybe just moderate Republican senators
Republican senators are certainly. They're very unhappy about having to make this vote because a lot of them are internationalists, and there's a lot of resentment between Hill and the White House on the Republican side that goes way back. It doesn't have anything to do with John Bolton. It has to do with the way the White House treats a lot of people on the Hill.
1-800-423-8255. Boston, Andy's on the line. Hi, Andy. What are you thinking?
Hi. Good morning. Thanks. I think it's a really great discussion, but I think, you know, given the UN's early formation post-World War II and the changing geopolitics since then, I think it might be interesting to interject some new blood that is more forthright. The UN has had a ton of issues that need some reform. I mean, you know, oil for food issues in Iraq, Rwanda, Darfur, you've got Islamic militants on UN or WA payroll in the territories.
Mm-hmm.
Having some new blood, I think would be a good thing. And it sounds like he's forthright, but it does sound like he is tempered and does know how to work within the framework of the guidelines he's given.
So imagine for me then, Andy Bolton at work in the UN, to see somebody with his jacket off and his sleeves rolled up, really pushing to make this happen, or doing it more in the back corridors in sort of whispered conversations.
Well, I guess my vision is, if he's effective, he's probably try both modalities to do that. But you know, to grapple with problems that are really systemic problems with the UN hands on, and to do so, whatever modalities seem to achieve, the good ends, and also still represent the U.S. interests. So.
Right. I agree with the caller, absolutely. You have to use all means of operations in the UN, whether it is meeting in quiet corners or whether it is being very forceful at a formal meeting or many things in between.
But, Catherine, I mean, I can also easily play the cynic on this one as well, that there's so much wrong with the UN and so many people saying this place can never reform itself. Too many people are too entrenched. There are too many tiny little countries that don't want to see anything changed. Just on the face of it, do you think UN reform is possible? And would you say that John Bolton is an essential part of the opportunity to get that done, which is something Constance was saying earlier in the program?
Yes, well, strong leadership is definitely required in order to get reasonable changes. So otherwise, there'll be tiny, tiny changes over time. I mean, it's constantly making small improvements, but you are correct. There are 191 countries. Many of them express their very particular views about very minute parts of managing the UN. And yes, there's a bureaucracy that's been built up over time, a lot of dedicated people, but still systems that have worked over time. And in order to change those things, there needs to be forceful leadership, not only from the U.S. and from other governments, but from throughout the disrupt the system.
But does there not also have to be with that the strong leadership, the forceful leadership that is committed to that kind of sharing of power? That's where it seems to me that John Bolton's record is dogging him here because of his insistence, his determination that the U.S. not give up the very powerful hand that it holds, the U.N.
Well, if you're strictly looking at it from the U.N. perspective, the U.N. perspective would like to have as many reasonable levels of power to be shared among many member states. But that's not the way the world works. The U.N. is the U.S. is the strongest power in the world, and there are many other powers that are very, very strong as well. And all of that needs to be reflected, and in fact is reflected, in the membership and how they operate in the Security Council and in the rest of the U.N.
Elaine Channon, just a look ahead for us, if you would. Senator Biden was saying at the close of the committee hearing yesterday that there's all this talk about, oh, we're rushing it and we're rushing it. In fact, that, you know, these things sometimes do take a long period of time. Do you think that we'll be looking for a Bolton vote at the Senate within a matter of weeks, or do you think it'll take longer than that?
Oh, I think that they'll get it done fairly soon. Looking further ahead, once that happens, and again, I think at this point I don't see the votes to block it. Then we have to figure out what's going to happen with Iran and its nuclear program. Is it going to go to the Security Council? Is it, and what's going to happen there?
And how important is it to have Bolton in a chair when those crucial issues come to the Security
Yes,
Council?
Yes, and North Korea as well.
Right. Okay. Well, we will follow. And I want to thank you, Elaine, for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
Elaine Channon, Time Magazine State Department correspondent. Catherine Bertini, I want to thank you for your time as well.
You're welcome.
Catherine is former UN Undersecretary General for Management and former Executive Director of the UN World Food Program. We also talked earlier in the program with Constanze Stelzenmüller. She is political editor of the German weekly Die Zeit. Our program is produced by Sarah Baker, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugars. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.